listening to the Everything You Want to Know About Therapy But We're Too Afraid to Ask podcast with your host, Jessica Strang, and your co-host, Jennifer Trevelli. If you've ever wanted to start therapy but didn't know where to begin, you've come to the right place. In this podcast, we will offer, what you call Therapy 101 by interviewing experts in the field and asking them anything and everything you want to know about therapy before you make that first appointment.
Dr. Linda Zepaden is a clinical psychologist who specializes in helping people overcome their self-defeating patterns of behavior. She is the author of 6 self-help books and is a frequent guest on programs including The Today Show, Good Morning America, and National Public Radio. In addition, Dr. Zepaden has been honored with fellow status by the American Psychological Association, a distinction given for psychologists who have had an international impact in the field of psychology. We are thrilled to speak to Dr. Zepaden on the podcast today.
Dr. Linda Zepaden, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
Hello. We're so excited to have you on today.
Well, thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Yes, absolutely. So when we start our show and with all of our guests, kind of the first question that we usually ask is we like to find out, when did you begin studying psychology? What kind of brought you into this field? What either life experiences or graduate school experiences did you go through to kind of get you to this point?
Well, I think the only thing I ever really thought about is being a psychologist. I mean, in working with people, I think that's because I had a dysfunctional mom.
And okay.
I recently came across a letter I wrote to her probably when I was about 16, and I could have written that today because I said, wow, myself, I didn't realize how functional I was in terms of just giving her positive feedback and helping her to move forward and all of this. Although I don't think any of it really worked. You know, some people that are determined to be downhill are just that way. But I was surprised at how well I did. And I couldn't imagine anybody wanting to do anything except psychology and understanding people more.
That's so interesting, you know, that it led you to that direction and wanting to help people, you know, because sometimes people would say, hey, I've got all these difficulties in my life. I want to go the other direction. I don't want to do this. You know, this is too hard.
Well, that's true. People may move in all different kinds of directions, but I do remember an uncle of mine who was in education, and he told me about kind of the 3-tier system about psychiatrist, psychologist, and social worker, and put them in like 3 tiers. And I think because I'm a middle child, I always like being in the middle. And so, and so I chose psychology, which I think was absolutely the best thing for me.
And where did you study psychology? Where did you go to grad school and before that college?
Well, let's see. I started off at Alfred University because I lived in New York, and I thought I wanted something country-ish, more, not as large. But I found out that small could be too small. So, so a whole lot of us city kids moved back to something local over the first year. And then I went at home to Brooklyn College and went to graduate school at Temple University. I got my master's there. Actually, this is an interesting point that when I applied to graduate school, at that point, a whole lot of people asked me, the people who were interviewing me for the school, do you eventually want to get married and have children? And I'd say yes. And they'd say, well, why should we give you the spot and take it away from a man?
Yes. Oh my God.
If you're older, you really don't know what pre-feminism meant. So I was so thankful to Temple that just accepted me without any question like that at all. And then actually, I got married, had three boys, got divorced, and then realized I had to do better for myself income-wise. And that's when I went to graduate school to get my doctorate.
Wonderful, wonderful. And currently, what is your position now? What would you consider to be the main position that you hold?
Well, I'm a psychologist in private practice, and it's an interesting story how I got to this. I've been able to be a solo practitioner with clients coming to me without accepting insurance for many years because of one kind of crazy thing I did at some point. Do you know, do you remember Ann Landers?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Dear Abby, right?
Okay. They were twin sisters. They were the only advice columnists in the States, I believe. And they were twin sisters, and in newspaper writing, everything is syndication. So they were from Chicago, and Ann Landers moved from the Chicago Sun-Times to the Chicago Tribune, which was their competition. So they ran a nationwide contest to replace Ann Landers. And I entered the contest at a very late date, just almost like at the very end. I procrastinated a bit on that one.
Which we'll get into. We will definitely get into that.
Yeah. Right.
But Ann Landers, I was one of the finalists. And it was a very big thing, you know? Yeah, I was in People magazine. I live on Long Island, and I contacted my local newspaper, which was Newsday, and they said, I asked them if they might want to do a story on it, and they said, no, why should we? And so I contacted William Geist from the New York Times, who wrote, he is Willie Geist's father. A lot of people know Willie Geist.
Oh, I know Willie Geist, of course.
Okay. Yes. But not William Geist, he wrote for the Times, and he said, and I had done, he had interviewed me for another story, which was on women in football a couple of years before. And he said, I'd be happy to do a story, provided you have some link to New York City. And I was in graduate school in New York City. So he said, fine. And he wrote a column. And once something is in the New York Times about it, it goes all over the country, all over Canada. And I was a big shot. And so what happened when I lost, I was one of the finalists and I lost. And so my local newspaper, it's a regional newspaper. They asked me if I would write a column for them. And to this day, I am still writing that column.
Wow.
And that's from the late 80s. And I'm still writing that column. And I get free advertising from it, and I get people that come to me because they believe I'm a celebrity, and I know what I'm doing as well. So that was one of the best decisions I ever made.
What an amazing story! That's so cool. And please share with our listeners, what is the name of the publication where you write your column, just in case they want to look that up too.
Okay, it's the Nassau Herald, they actually publish a series of heralds in all different towns on Long Island, but Nassau Herald is the main one.
That is so amazing.
And actually today, I write, and some of your listeners may be interested in this, since I was writing all of those and people were asking me for the columns that didn't get the newspaper, I create a newsletter myself called Psych Wisdom. And so people just have to write to me and say they want to subscribe. It's free. It comes out once every 2 weeks, and I have three articles in it, along with a really relevant quote. I love quotes. And so my newsletter has grown to about 1,500 people. So I have a lot of people who are interested in psych wisdom.
Yes, I love that. And we'll post that information on our social media pages, and also give a recap of your website at the end as well, so we can make sure people can get on and sign up for the newsletter.
Okay.
Absolutely. So can you tell us a little, I know you work with in private practice now. Can you tell us a little bit about the type of population you work with currently in your practice?
Well, I work with anybody really who I tend to not think about people the way a lot of people think about psychologists. I mean, a lot of people say, well, what do you specialize in when they know mm-hmm. I'm a psychologist? And I say, I specialize in the whole person, mm. who you are, how you want to grow, what you're dissatisfied with. So unless somebody has somebody who really needs a specialist in some area, I can work with them. You know, if something is really out of my arena where I know nothing about that, because that's a specialized issue or problem, I will refer to someone else. But people come to see me because they know I'm knowledgeable. They know I'm caring. Mm-hmm. I'm experienced in living life, in loving, in overcoming difficulties. And I will respect your life journey. I don't fit you into a box that says, this is how you are, and this is what you must do to change in seven mm-hmm. sessions or less, or otherwise your insurance is out the window. You know, so much of insurance tells you that, you know, you have to be this way, and then you have to make this change mm-hmm. and that change within a certain period of time. Otherwise, we don't count you anymore in your insurance coverage. So that really turns me off.
And I think it's amazing that you have a practice built solely without using insurance, because it mm-hmm. is a turnoff, to be honest, as a provider to work with insurance, because exactly for the reasons that you said, that people have to be labeled diagnosed and then given a certain amount of time to, in essence, get better. And I think that's really hard, you know, so
yeah,
I applaud you. I commend you for having an entire mm-hmm. practice without having to deal with the dreaded insurance company.
Yeah, I mean, I will say that things have gotten worse. At the very beginning, I was in one or two insurance panels. And then I distinctly remember having a client who was a professor at a university. And then I had to, you know, speak to this person on the phone and give all this personal information. And I was like, I was getting nauseous from it. And I mm-hmm. felt I was so I was just, you know, not acting in her own interest. And so I told people that I am getting out of the insurance, and I'll, you know, for the people who are used to it, I'll keep my rate lower. But I couldn't deal with that anymore with good conscience.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of the reasons why somebody would come to see you? Identified as wanting to make a change or growth, or is it specific to, you know, the main reason we're here to talk to you about, is it procrastination? What would be some of those top reasons people would come to see you?
Well, people will come to see me for all reasons. The way I got into procrastination, though, is that I am a very active therapist that asks people to focus on the here and now and what they really want to accomplish. And I often give them what I call a homework assignment, but I make sure that they know it's not a homework like in school. You know, we talk about mm-hmm. something and I want them to put it into practice so that they are not just talking theoretically or abstractly, that they want mm-hmm. to talk with, get somebody or get more, get braver about something. I want them to do something to move them forward. And the way I got into procrastination as my major specialty is that I found that when I asked the people next time, you know, next session, well, how did you do on this that we spoke about last week? And some of them would answer, what did we speak about last week? And others would say, oh, I did this, this, and this, and I'd be so impressed. So it was really a huge difference. And I realized that those people who, like, you know, disconnected between what they say they want to do and what they intend to do and what they actually get around to doing, that has a lot to do with procrastination. I saw this in clients who didn't follow through. And some clients were pleased with their accomplishments, but they know they even do better with a tailwind at their back, and they wanted to move forward in a stronger way. And so I began to, I'm known for 6 styles of procrastination, but I didn't dream these up myself. I handed out questionnaires and I interviewed people as to why and what they think they is behind their procrastination. And that's when I came up with 6 different styles of procrastination and realized that with these styles, people need to have different approaches to overcoming it. Because otherwise it's like saying to one client, well, you need to slow down, and to another client, you need to speed up. You know, everybody's different. Mm-hmm. So that's how I got into it. And I have an interesting story about my very first book, which was published by Penguin, and it's called It's About Time. And I have a son that at that point was living in Russia. I don't like to say that today. But, you know, he was helping them actually become capitalists at that point when it was during Perestroika. I don't know if you remember that, when they were turning over from communists to being able to think of capitalism in a good way. It's not a crime to make a profit. At any rate, I said to him, he's a very creative person. And I said to him, my book is finished, only I don't have a title yet. And he said, it's about time. And I said, yeah, I know, Glenn, it's about time. And he said, no, that's the title. And I said, you got it. Thanks, Glenn. So that's how the book came about. And now this is my more recent book is about how to overcome the 6 styles of procrastination, how to beat procrastination in the digital age because it makes it so much harder, and then the 6 styles of procrastination and how to overcome them. And a more recent one for college students.
Oh, okay.
About overcoming your procrastination, the college student edition. So I think that's very, very much needed.
Absolutely. Can you tell us, I think most people know, or we've experienced procrastination or procrastinated in some ways. Can you tell us what procrastination is and talk a little bit about that, and even maybe share some of those 6 styles of procrastination with us?
Well, some people believe that it's nothing more than laziness. You know, just you're lazy, go and do it. And I don't believe that's true. I believe that the crux of procrastination is that it's an unresolved approach avoidance conflict, which we as psychologists know what that is, approach avoidance. In lay terms, it's a part of you knows you need or even want to do a task, but another part of you resists doing it. So I think of it like you're kind of like a Hamlet in the world of action. You're torn between 2 impulses, to do or not to do. That is the question. So when you're ambivalent like that, it makes it tough for you to choose a clear commitment to action. So even if you start doing it, a lot of people start doing a task, but then there's lingering resistance. So they either don't do it, or they drop it, or they work at a snail's pace, and they never get beyond this. It's really a crippling conflict. So their positive energy remains down. They're really upset with themselves, or people start yelling at them and they're upset with them, you know? But in the digital age, it's even harder. I think we all know why, because social networks seduce us and, you know, beepers beckon, and we have so many diversions. And, you know, if you add up the hours that you spend on stuff that has nothing to do with either your career goals or your personal goals, and you can be teetering on the edge of the boulevard of broken dreams, you know?
Dr. Sapaden, but doesn't everybody procrastinate? I mean, isn't it something that is pretty typical? And when does it become something that is then, problematic?
Well, clearly, people aren't perfect.
Right.
And procrastination happens. And a messy closet remains that way, even though you promised yourself you'd get to it. That's my procrastination. You know, messy closets and drawers.
Oh, I thought you were looking at my closet. So I was like, oh, boy.
I believe that's also my procrastination as well.
Well, I'm glad we agree on it. And, you know, a tough, you may even have a tough talk. You delay on doing a tough task you need to do. But for some people, procrastination is not something that happens on occasion. Okay. It's chronic. It's pervasive. It's deeply rooted pattern. And if you're one of those people, you know, and everybody around you knows, your family, even your work people, that you have a built-in tendency to let things slide.
And
it's not only with challenging tasks, sometimes even simple ones, but that's kind of built into your, to the way you respond to things.
Mm-hmm. And I definitely think it's true. And like you said, even with the day and age of the digital age and social media, I can definitely tell you there have been several times where social media has taken me away from doing the things that I've needed to do, or kind of get sucked into that rabbit hole of social media. So why is it so hard to beat procrastination in the digital age? And how can we, like, what can we do about that? Because I don't think social media is going away anytime soon.
No.
For sure it's not. So let's see. I believe that that procrastination for people who are chronic procrastinators is an embedded habit. And when you have an, I tell a lot of my clients, and this is, could relate to procrastination, could relate to other things as well. To change a habit is something you do without even thinking about it. And here I got into trouble with one of my clients because I said, like, a habit is something like, you know, you just go and you brush your teeth in the morning, you know, and you don't even think about it. You just go and do it every morning and every evening. And this young man said, oh, I don't brush my teeth every day. And I said,
oh, boy.
Really? And he said, no, maybe about twice a week. So I said, okay.
Wow. So we had other fish to fry with this young man.
So you need to know that a habit is something you just do or not do. So if your procrastination is an embedded habit, you need to be very aware and implement specific skills and strategies. And I believe they need to be tailored to your personality style, which is why I came up with six styles. And that this is essential because as we all know, the right advice for one style is the wrong advice for another. If somebody's a perfectionist and they're too neat in their closets, you know, you want to tell them it's okay if this isn't perfectly aligned, you know. Mm-hmm. But if somebody is has total messy closet, you know, don't you think you should begin to organize it a little bit better, or get rid of some things, you know, or pick the clothes up off the floor, stuff like that. So one change program does not fit all, which is why I developed change programs for six styles of procrastination.
So can you go through them, Dr. Sapaden, the six styles that you're discussing, like which, so we kind of have a good idea of where do we fit in?
Sure. Well, I'm going to tell you the six styles along with what I call their Hallmark butt excuse, because, you know, people don't think much about the word but I do.
Mm-hmm. So, same. I do too. I hear that a lot. I like that idea, Dr. Strang, but you know, that's kind of what I hear. Yeah.
Because everything that follows the but is what really counts. Mm-hmm. And I use this mm-hmm. a lot, even as I listen to people speak, not only with procrastination, but with other issues as well. So the first is the perfectionist. And the hallmark but excuse for that is, but it's not perfect. So you can't finish your report because it's not perfect. And so you're late for an occasion because, this dress wasn't perfect and I had to change to another one. And then I didn't have shoes to match that. And so I didn't do that. So, you know, you're trying to be perfect. So, and the perfectionist spends too much time on details that are not particularly significant.
Okay.
Now, the opposite of the perfectionist is the dreamer. Now, the dreamer can be very smart about their butt is, but I hate dealing with all those annoying details. You know, that so they never finish, let's say, a report or even their timesheets to get paid because I can't deal this. Yeah. So the dreamer doesn't pay enough attention to details. They could be very bright. They could be very creative, often are creative. After all, they're dreamers. So, they don't do the necessary work to do to make their dreams come true. Now, as you can see, I'm going to really give you three styles, but the perfectionist is on one end of the scale of paying attention to details. The dreamer is on the other end. Mm-hmm. Now, here is the warrior and the crisis maker. The warrior, but I'm afraid to make a change, or I'm afraid to do this. So the warrior worries too much, and the crisis maker is the one that doesn't worry enough until the very last minute. So the crisis maker says, but I work best under pressure. I can't do anything until I'm under the gun. So the warrior worries too much. The crisis maker doesn't worry enough until the 11th hour, I should say, right?
Mm-hmm.
Until 11th hour. Mm-hmm. So those are the two ends of that particular scale. Then the other is the defier. And of course, the defier could be an open defier or a passive aggressive defier. And the passive aggressive defier says they'll do it, but they don't. And the open defier says, but why should I do it? You know. Mm-hmm. And the opposite end of the defier is the pleaser. And you would think that a pleaser wouldn't procrastinate because after all, they want to please. However, the pleaser is often so busy doing things for other people that they never get to their own stuff. So they will say, but I have so much to do. You know, I told my sister I would do this, and I told this one I'd do that. Mm-hmm. Now I have no time to do my own stuff. So those are the six styles. Were you able to catch all six of them?
I laughed because I think I am one of them. For sure. I mean, to the point, you know, but maybe like a little bit of a dash of one of them.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like I have a sprinkling of a couple of those in there.
Okay. Oh, really? Really, Chen? Well, I'm curious which one. Now I'm curious, Chen, which ones.
Well, that was my next comment. You can be more than one, yes.
Okay.
And, I put it into these six styles because although you could be more than one, it could be, let's say, I've had people say, but I'm a perfectionist in this area, but I'm a dreamer in another area. There are lots of times we have more than one issue that's stopping us from becoming our best.
Mm-hmm.
So I have developed my change programs. Actually, I break it down to not just what you need to do. I break it down to what would be a good way to change your thinking, because I believe it all begins with the mind.
Mm-hmm.
Begin with changing your thinking, how to begin with changing your speaking patterns, not only to other people, but to yourself. What you say to yourself is so important, and changing some of your acting or doing skills. So I can go into detail with that in a couple of minutes. Do you have any questions before that?
Go ahead, Jen.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, having these six styles of procrastination, you can definitely see how somebody could get stuck in those patterns. And I think it would be great for you to kind of share with us more about your change program and and how to kind of help people reach their goals.
Okay. Let me also say that it doesn't mean that procrastination is always bad, always always dysfunctional. If you're not ready to do something, if you don't have the time, you don't have the energy to do it, you can put it off. There's, you know, there's no problem with putting things off if you don't put it off forever. But it's not good when these procrastination becomes a deeply rooted pattern and people get to know you as a procrastinator. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have people who clients who say, you know, they know at work, they call me the procrastinator. They keep me on because they know once I get it done, I'm really good, but they don't trust that I'm going to do it unless they're on my case. So let me just give you a few examples, okay?
That sounds great, yes.
Now, with a perfectionist, it would be best, this is the thinking pattern. It would be best to strive if it's something really important, let's say it's an important report you need to write, to strive for excellence, not perfection. And if it's just, let's say something like making your bed, strive for let it be good enough, and lots of things good enough is good enough. You know, it's mm-hmm. You know, you put the sheets up, you put the cover up, and maybe you fluff your pillows, and that's it. Let it be. You don't have to be so detail oriented that everything needs to be perfect. Nothing needs to be perfect. Perhaps if you're building a bridge, you know. but otherwise you want to strive for excellence, but not perfection. And again, to think that good enough is often good enough. Now, an example of a speaking pattern that is really important for perfectionists is to change their should to could. Mm. Perfectionists are always giving themselves shoulds. I should have done this. I should do it. I should do it faster. I should do it better. Now, and change it to could. Perhaps I could do it better if I did this, this, and this. Perhaps I could ask somebody for advice so that I could make sure that I'm doing this the correct way. So you want to shoulds are like beating yourself up, particularly a should have. Mm-hmm. And could is like opening up your mind to other possibilities. I could do it this way, or I could ask somebody, or I could check it out online if this is the right way to do it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
I like that, Dr. Sepadan, because I feel like often my clients will say to me, I should be doing this, I should be doing that. It feels so hardwired to get out mm-hmm. of that like almost like a tunnel vision, you know, like mm-hmm. we have to do it only this way. And it's usually when I point out to them, that's the first mistake is the should part. It's usually led with something that, you know, seems a little bit out of reach constantly. Right. And yeah.
Yeah. So it's good to call people on it. And once they appreciate the difference between shoulds and coulds that they really appreciate that difference. And it doesn't mean that there aren't any shoulds in life. I mean, I guess you should flush the toilet after you use it.
or your client should brush his teeth.
Brush their teeth, yes.
Exactly. That really, it's really affected me.
But I think you get what I mean.
Yeah.
And this pattern begins very early, so it's a very freeing pattern. Now, in terms of an action skill, one of the things I tell perfectionists is to give yourself a time limit for completing a task. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, it will go on and on and on and on. And you'll end up being late. You know, you'll end up somebody else calling you on this. So you will completely miss the deadline. So you want to give yourself a time limit. And if let's say, well, again, I write an article every week and I will give myself a timeline for completing this article. And what I will do go back and the second day is to reread it. And anybody who's a writer knows that when you reread something after time has passed, it's very different from rereading it right then and there.
Right.
So actually you're giving yourself time limit for completing a task. You're actually doing better because you can go back to it even an hour later. You'll have different thoughts that or a day later than going on and on and on.
I do have a question, if you don't mind. I have a funny feeling that Jennifer and I both have a same style. And Jen, can I guess this out loud? Maybe Dr. Sabine could tell us maybe our thinking style. I want to say that we're probably dreamers.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Jen, would you agree? Was that one of your sprinkles?
Yeah, that was definitely a sprinkle. Between that and the people pleaser.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's not me at all. I think I'm a dreamer. I'm a dreamer and maybe a perfectionist, which is really weird. So,
Well, that I feel like those, for me, especially those two, like in some situations, it's the perfectionism, in some, in more probably situations, it's the dreamer. But then I also get that sprinkle of people pleasing in some situations.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think my main entree is the dreamer with a sprinkle of perfectionism. Mm-hmm.
Well, obviously there are good things about each style. It's when it goes overboard that it's problematic. Right. So as long as you're dreamers, let me get to some of the ideas that might help dreaming. Okay.
Yes.
Well, in terms of thinking, I suggest that dreamers develop a habit of thinking, of grounding their thinking. And one way to do that is through the 5 W's and 1 H, the who, what, where, when, why, and how. Hmm. So you can say, let's say I'm going to apply to graduate school. Well, when, you know, why, where would you apply? How would you apply? You know, how would you make the decision? So once it may not be that all of these 5 W's and 1 H apply, but most of them definitely will. So you ground your thinking that way instead of, again, dreamers are generally up in the air. And so if you bring it down to earth, bring it down to specifics, you can have some wonderful dream come true instead of just dreaming it.
I was gonna say, so create basically a blueprint of how to make this dream come true.
A specific blueprint, but again, asking those questions generally helps you to do that.
Okay.
Now, in terms of speaking, one of the really powerful things dreamers say a whole lot of, I'll try to. I'll try to get this done.
Oh my God. Huh. Are you reading my mind?
Okay. So try to change to I will along with a date.
Ooh.
So okay, I'll try to get this article finished. I will get this article finished the latest Monday night. No.
Okay.
So you move from try to something definitive, because try to is, again, it's up in the air. You know, you could try to do a whole lot of things, but that doesn't mean you'll get them done.
Right.
Now, in the terms of taking action, dreamers in particular need to use alarms, timers, beepers to remind you to do a task now. Okay.
I'm sorry, Dr. Sabine. I'm looking at the stack of post-its over here. All these post-its that I'm like frantically crossing off. Yes, yes. I completely agree with this.
Okay. So hopefully that's helpful to you.
I think that's fantastic. And I think that's so helpful to break it down in, you know, just knowing that it could be a sprinkle of this, a sprinkle of that, and then specific to then what can you do about it?
Right.
Because I think that's the hardest part, isn't it, Jen? Not knowing what to do.
Yes, absolutely. And I think it's, and I think probably for a lot of people, especially ones who, you know, have more of the chronic procrastination the not knowing what to do then just kind of continues that procrastination to happen. But this is, these are really good kind of concrete steps that somebody can take to definitely help move them out of that procrastination.
Yeah, so you can see how the advice for one style is absolutely different from the other style. Mm-hmm. And if you said to to, let's say, the perfectionist to develop a habit of thinking with five W's and one H, you know, that would make them even more crazy because they're looking for perfection in all this. So what if I chose the wrong how to, you know, get them even more nervous. So that's why, just like, you know, this, just like we don't all wear the same size or style of clothing, we don't think and act the same way, so that we need different advice.
So one area, go ahead, Dr. Spaden.
Well, I was going to ask whether we have time to go into the others, or do you want to do something?
Yeah, actually, would you like to do that? We were going to ask a little bit about fear, but I think that given that I'm guessing Jen wants to know more about the other sprinkles she has.
Okay.
Because we've only gone through the ones that I had, so it's selfish of me. Let's do that. Let's skip ahead and talk a little bit about, is that okay with you, Jen?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Spaden.
I mean, we
what's
could do
next?
another podcast on fear. So
oh, we always could do that. Yeah. Okay. We can talk about fear another day.
Well, the warrior in particular, in terms of thinking, I say recognize that making no decision is in fact a decision. So if you say, I can't decide, that's your decision. And is that really what you want to do? And if you make no decision, guess what happens? You know, the decision is made for you. Either through time, you pass the limit, you know, not can't do this anymore, or other people make the decision for you. So you need to know, do you really want to have other people make your life decisions, or do you want to be in charge? Now, in terms of the speaking skill, this one is really significant for warriors. Warriors often say, I can't, you know, I can't do this. Mm-hmm. So change I can't to, but one thing I can do is, remember what comes after the but is significant. I can't figure out how to do the podcast, but one thing I can do is to ask Jennifer and Jessica. So, you know, but one thing I can't figure this out, but one thing I can do is. So end the sentence with that, and you're ending in a positive way. Mm-hmm. Action is to break down large, intimidating tasks into smaller can-do tasks. So, you know, how am I going to get all this done? Well, just get this section of it done right now. That's all you need to concern yourself with. Because otherwise you worry too much and you get intimidated and nothing happens. So you want to break it down into smaller can-do tasks.
Okay.
Yeah, and I like that. And I like how, I mean, oftentimes you hear to change can't to can, but I like how it's, but this is one thing I can do versus, you know, oftentimes those who say I can't do it, it's so overwhelming and it's such a big can't for them. Mm-hmm. But by breaking it down into that smaller can, it feels like, oh, I can actually accomplish it. Like, yeah, I can do that.
Exactly.
I like that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Good. Now this crisis maker, gets motivated with last minute stress. So you need to identify other motivators besides last minute stress. Mm-hmm. And I often say, you know, would it be not disappointing somebody? Can that be a motivator for you?
I like that.
Can it be that you might not make the deadline and it might cost you more money? Would that be a stress? Where it might be, especially with college students, would it be like you can impress your parents instead of they're expecting you to wait for the last minute. So you want mm-hmm. to think of what other motivators besides last minute stress. Because crisis makers often say, I can't get motivated except at the last minute. Well, there are mm-hmm. other motivators. They're just not focusing on them.
I like that idea of flipping it to something that might be tangible too, right? Mm-hmm. Because like because that last minute stress, that, believe me, like that makes me anxious to know that people are not doing things in time. the few things, mm-hmm. whenever that happens to me, it makes me so uncomfortable that I don't ever want that to happen. So I can't imagine being consistently a last minute Larry, you know, and like, mm-hmm. and doing that and identifying those other areas where they could be, you know, that could be helpful. I think that's wonderful.
Good. Thank you. Now, in terms of words, crisis makers are always talking about feeling words. And I don't feel like doing it now. So use more thinking words. And that connects with other motivators. You know, do you think that you might do a better report if you started earlier versus I don't feel like doing it now? Use your brain to be thinking about ramifications of your leaving things for the last minute versus I don't feel like it. I can't get motivated to do it. Now, in terms of an action skill is actually to create motivators to change boring tasks into more interesting ones. Now, do you remember it was an old TV program called Beat the Clock? I mean, they still have those, but they don't call it Beat the Clock, where they would give somebody a task to do and they set a timer and they would have to do it with, this is a TV program, they'd have to do it, let's say, within 3 minutes. And it would be all kinds of things running from one thing to another thing to another thing. So if you get bored easily, as crisis makers do, change it into a more interesting task by playing Beat the Clock. Now, I do this myself when it comes to cleaning up my kitchen. I will set the timer for 10 minutes and I will get all the dishes in the dishwasher, the counters clean, the tables clean, everything done within 10 minutes. Why? Because I don't stop to check my phone then. I don't stop to read an article then. It's like boom, 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 boom. I got to do this before the timer goes off and that's it. And it's amazing how much you could do within a short period of time.
I like that. It's like a game show. Mm-hmm. Right.
It is.
Like that's what I'm picturing in my head. Like I'm picturing a game show in my head and you're cleaning up your kitchen and the lights are going, like the countdown's happening and it's closer to the end.
Jen, I know what I'm going to get you for your birthday next. Maybe a big giant button. A button that makes a lot of noise that you can press it when you finish with a task.
Yes.
Okay, now on to the defier.
Okay.
As I said before, when there's something somebody tells you to do or you know you're supposed to do, you basically have three choices. You can comply, you can defy, you can do passive-aggressive defiance. So there are times to defy, and you need to pick your battles. So if you want to defy something that you feel is unfair or just inappropriate or not right, whatever, pick your battles and defy what you think is appropriate to defy. But don't defy just because an authority figure told you to do it. You know, an authority figure could certainly be professor, it could be a therapist, you know, it could be anybody who's in a position that's a little bit higher than you. And if you say, no, I'm not going to do that, you just asked me to do it, I'm not going to do that, you know, you're going to forget that some of the things that you're being asked to do are within, for your good, you know, it's for your good, not for the other person's good. So it's not that you should never defy, it's that you need to pick your battles. Now in terms of the verbals, I particularly like to speak about passive aggressive defiers and tell them that you need to mean what you say and say what you mean. So think about it first. If you say, I'll do it, And then, but your heart really isn't in it, and you're not going to do it. Don't say you will. And if you can always go back and say, you know, I said I would do this, or I said I would have time to help you with this, but I realize I don't have the time, or I could give you just 10 minutes time. You know, can I answer any questions real quickly? So say what you mean and mean what you say. Very important for your reputation.
Okay.
And in terms of actions, understand the difference between acting and reacting. Reacting, the other person is in control. So if the other person tells you, you know, you should really do this, and you're reacting and, how am I going to do this? He told me to do it. Strive to act instead of. It could be that he wanted me to clean up his mess. Well, I'm not going to clean up his mess, but I could, I mean, let's say it's your brother, and I could help him for 15 minutes with his mess because I know he has trouble with it. So strive to act in which you are the actor, not the reactor in which the other person is in charge. So once you appreciate the difference between actor and reactor, a lot of things become clear as to what you can do without defying.
I think that one is my, I think I'm taking that one straight to my teenager. Linda. Okay. I think everything about what you just said, I'm going to have to hit the replay button constantly before I talk to her.
That's very important for teenagers. Yes. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And now our very last one, the pleaser. In terms of thinking, I say goodbye to the Superman, Superwoman myth. You cannot do it all. You need to say yes to some things and no to others. So you cannot do it all, nor does it make you a better person if you do it all, because there will always be something that slips through the cracks, or if you aim to do it all, you're not going to do it all well. Because we all have a limited amount of, I used to say three things: time, energy, and money. Now, the vast majority of us do have a limited amount of time, energy, and money. But in today's world, in which there are super billionaires, gazillionaires, some people have unlimited money. Yeah. But we all have limited time and energy. So you want to say goodbye to the Superman, Superwoman myth. You cannot do it all. Which means, in terms of the verbs, don't hesitate to say no to others when you think it's appropriate. And you need to say, you can say no politely. I still remember I went on a nationwide book tour with my first book, and I was in Minneapolis, and this woman who was on interviewing me, when I said this, she was so excited because everybody asked her to do something, to be a guest someplace, to speak to some organization. And she was a very charming lady. And when I said you could say no to others in a very polite way, well, no, thank you so much for asking me, but I just don't have the time, or I'm booked for that day or whatever. You know, you can do that. So don't hesitate to say no. When you need to say no, in order to say yes to what you need to take care of. And my very last suggestion in terms of an action is, with pleasers tend to do everything themselves, so don't be afraid to enlist or hire help when you think you need it. That other people can help you out. You don't always have to be helping other people out.
I like those strategies. I think those are really easy to, you know, for someone to take that in versus, you know, like, this is why you're doing what you're doing. I mean, you're telling people that, but you're also telling what to do, you know, what they can do, you know, for each one of them.
Right.
Which does, I mean, it gives people a tangible way to move from the procrastination.
Right. I always believe in tangible ways and different ways of thinking. You know, when I studied therapy more like psychoanalysis. You know, I was not that thrilled with it.
Mm-hmm.
There was one particular therapy that really, really caught on with me, and that is Gestalt therapy.
Okay.
You're familiar with it?
Oh, yeah. Jen, was it Empty Chair was the biggest one that we would always do, like these exercises in class as well.
Well, the reason it really caught on with me is because I felt it was humanistic. It was holistic, meaning it took into account every part of you. It was person-centered, and it focused on your present life and your present challenges, not so much delving into past experiences, although you could go there, but that wasn't the focus. And the focus was on here and now, and as you said, the empty chair technique. Now, I ask where you have different parts of yourself on the empty chair. So I often use that technique, even with procrastination. Okay, part of you doesn't want to do it. Let me hear the part that doesn't want to do it or won't do it. Now, let me hear the part that really wants to do it and is going to get motivated to do it, and have a dialogue with yourself and go back and forth, and I have people move from chair to chair. Or I should say from couch to couch. and so you learn to own different parts of yourself. It could also be used with speaking to your boss or your relative or your spouse or whoever. But I think it's most effective when you're speaking to different parts of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And then you come to a conclusion. I ask people, okay, here are the two different parts of yourself. Now, what do you want to do with this? How do you want to make a conclusion? And the conclusion is often some kind of solution to the procrastination, or it could be to other problems as well.
Or even tapping into their thinking style and you know, different areas you can help them change too, you know, using the techniques that you had discussed before.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Right. And I think it's great. I mean, I know we've talked to people who, you know, have never been in therapy or have considered it, but their kind of frame of reference is what they see on TV or what they've, like, the stereotypical version of you just sit on the couch and, like, you spill all your problems to the person and they just sit there, listen, and you. And I think this gives a whole different perspective that therapy is not. I mean, there's work that has to be done, and you're giving them tangible tools and skills to use to make those changes.
Exactly. You know, I think it's strange sometimes that Freudian therapy, I mean, people speak about therapy. Oh, yeah, Freud, you know, like he's ancient history already in a way. And yet his name is the most popular name that comes up in therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And he lived in a different era, a different country, a different time. And the challenges and the life that people live today is very different. And of course, we move so much faster to get delving, spending. I mean, it used to be that people went to therapy 5 times a week and went for years and years and years. You know, that's not going to happen today. So we need to be more proactive in terms of time and solutions that we want in terms of therapy.
So speaking of what, you know, as Jennifer had just said, this is what some people think therapy is like.
Mm-hmm.
What should people expect or not expect when they see you in therapy?
Well, when they see me in therapy, usually they relate to me as a nice person. who is interested in knowing about their issues and is a very good listener and will give them feedback. I tell them that at the very beginning that, you tell me issues, I'm going to give you feedback and ideas as to how to improve your living. And again, I don't see people only for procrastination issues, all kinds. So I think it just has a mind of its own, in the sense the therapy itself has a mind of its own, in the sense that it's moving at a good pace, not too slowly mm-hmm. and not too quickly, so that you get to show yourself, experience yourself. And I've been shocked that a lot of people during this COVID time, I've been seeing on Zoom, and I've been shocked at how good therapy can happen over Zoom. I never would have thought mm-hmm. that.
Agreed.
And mm-hmm. and yet you feel like you're right there with the person because you know, you're so close. You see the person so easily, and the ideas spring out, and they're ideas that respect who you are and how you think and the changes that you want to make. So, you know, that's the way I operate in terms of the kind of therapy I have. I'm not working from a book. Mm-hmm. I'm not working from a program that says you must do things this, and this way. Mm-hmm. I'm listening to the person, focusing on the here and now, and on understanding what brought the person to see me and helping with solutions.
That's great. What would you say you like most about your work?
I like helping people. I like watching people grow. I like getting to know people. I like respecting people's and learning about and respecting people's life's journey. And I love the idea of people being able to change. And again, maybe going back to my very first statement I made with you in this podcast, and that is perhaps because my mom never changed mm-hmm. and was dysfunctional to the very end and even suicidal to the end. Maybe because I couldn't get her to change, I take great satisfaction in helping other people change.
I think that's a beautiful sentiment. Yeah. I think, to wish that, and even though you didn't necessarily see that, to still have the hope that others can, you know. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One thing that we do, you know, the reason why Jen and I started this podcast was because, Jen, was it during COVID? Now I'm losing track. It was during COVID, right? And we thought, we couldn't see everybody because people would kept calling us and we're trying to figure this out. And we wanted to start this podcast to really help a lot of people who had never had any contact with a therapist, never had gone to a therapy session, maybe thought, you know, they watched the movie with Billy Crystal, Analyze This, and they thought this is how it's going to be or something. And so we wanted to talk to experts such as yourself to ask all the questions. And I think the question that we like to ask the most, because we are trying to demystify what therapy looks like. The question is, what is something that you would like to, you know, if you could talk to those people that had never been in the therapy session, had no contact with a therapist, what would you like to demystify in the area of therapy for those folks?
Are you asking me the question, or you asking me?
No, it's okay. It was long-winded. I do get it. I tend to be that way too.
Well, to demystify, mostly that you need to be crazy to go to therapy. You know, I think you need to be smart to go to therapy, and a lot more people believe that now, but certainly some people still believe you have to be crazy or nuts or something's wrong with you to go to therapy. And it's a growth experience. I look at it as a growth experience, like college, you know, or like high school, or, you know, if you went to art school or whatever, you'd be learning. And so if you want to continue growing, if you want to grow in the area of understanding yourself, understanding the people around you, understanding sometimes even the world, therapy is a wonderful way to do that. Mm-hmm. And that it has nothing to do about you being crazy or nuts or something's wrong with you. It's more about you want to grow in a particular area, something you think is stopping you from doing that, or your pace is not strong enough. So this will help you. And if it doesn't help you, I have had some patients who say they've been with a therapist for sometimes decades, and mm-hmm. they never asked this question, or they never operated the way I did. And they say, you know, this is really nice to be, one, respected, and two, not to be told this is the way you should be doing stuff. Right. So I do think it's you as a therapist need to respect your clients, and if you don't respect your client, don't take them on, refer them to someone else, because you need to have a respectful relationship on both ends.
I like that. I do too. I really like that. I love how it's not, it's really to help you, the person, grow to be the best person that they can be mm-hmm. for themselves. I really like that. Well, Dr. Sapaden, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
It was delightful talking to you and learning so much about procrastination and our styles and kind of how we can start to do something different.
And we're probably going to have another podcast about fear, because we did skip over some of those questions, which I still have a lot of questions about that. So this isn't going to be the last time you hear from us, Dr. Sapaden.
No. Okay.
Absolutely not. But it was a pleasure to talk to you today.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to do it. And I was a little nervous about doing it because I've been wanting to do podcasts, but I haven't done them. So this is my very first. It's my virgin podcast.
Wonderful. And, it was with us. How exciting.
And it was a pleasure. And I'm no longer a virgin. So that's great.
And now you have to start your own podcast.
Okay. Yes. Well, and for more information on Dr. Linda Sapaden and her work, you can find her at www.psychwisdom.com. So that's www.psychwisdom.com, or you can also email her at Dr. Sapaden, drsapadin at AOL.com, or Linda Sapaden, LindaSapadin at gmail.com. Thank you for listening, and as always, subscribe to the Everything You Want to Know About Therapy But We're Too Afraid to Ask podcast everywhere you listen to good podcasts, and give us your 5-star review. You can also follow us on Instagram at therapy_podcast_ for updates, additional information, and message us topics and questions you always wanted to know but were too afraid to ask.
Thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoyed this podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us wherever you listen to good podcasts. And keep up with episode updates on Instagram at therapy_podcast_. There, you can send us messages on topics you'd like to hear about or anything that comes to mind. Bye for now.